Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. This week is the first book of May for the May challenge, which was to read a book that has won an award, any award ever of all time. So you have a lot of options to choose from. My pick, which is the book that we read for today, won the Pulitzer in 1925. We'll talk about that in a moment. There is a third Tuesday that would be a regular book release episode day in the month of May, which is the month that it is when you're listening to this, if you're listening to it anytime close to the release date and not, I don't know, 6 months in the future. So we will actually have a third book for this month, which will be chosen by our Patreon patrons. So stay tuned to figure out what that will be. Becca's pick, which will be the next book, is Celestial Bodies by...
Celestial Bodies by Joka Alharty. And yes, that won the International Booker in 2019.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the news. Now on to our discussion of So Big by Edna Ferber. The book was published by Doubleday in 1924, and it was, as I already said, awarded the Pulitzer Prize in 1925. It was also adapted into a film in 1932. It starred Barbara Steinwick and Betty Davis. And then again, it was adapted in 1953, starring people that I'd never heard of before, so I didn't bother writing their names down. So it was kind of a big deal, which surprised me because I've basically never heard of it, except for like within the last couple of years. I've seen the cover come up in different spots. But anyway, the novel follows the life of Selina Peake de Jong in the late 1800s. As a child, she and her father moved around a lot. He was a gambler, and depending on his luck, they lived richly or poorly. After his death, when she is an older teen, Selina is forced to leave her school and her friends, and she chooses to become a country school teacher. She feels like that's probably her best option for having a life that's not having to move back east and live with her spinster aunts. And so she becomes a country school teacher in High Prairie, Illinois, in a Dutch suburb / farming community outside of Chicago. You would probably call it a suburb now, but in the time that the book is taking place, it's just farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And she is seen as an oddity in High Prairie because she spends a lot of time talking about the beauty of everyday things, like the cabbages that the farmers grow, and they're very practical people, and she's kind of fanciful. She lives with a family for a short time, encouraging their oldest son to see the beauty in the world and to continue his education. And then she, soon after arriving, marries a poor farmer named Purvis de Jong. They have a son named Dirk, who is often referred to by his nickname So Big, which is where the title comes from. So, never quite satisfied by homemaking for a farmer who is barely scraping by, Selina urges Purvis to let her help him improve the farm soils and growing strategy, but he's stuck in his ways and the ways of his father, and she's not really given that opportunity until Purvis dies, when, determined to provide the best possible life for So Big, she takes over farm operations, including the marketing and all of that, and she keeps herself educated on like new techniques in agriculture and like what's selling well and etc. And so she's able to keep the farm afloat and is actually quite successful and sends So Big off to college. But she learns that her dreams for So Big are not necessarily what he wants for his own life. So Big, just as an interesting little note, was inspired in part by the life of Antje. I think it's Antje. I'm sorry that I don't know Dutch pronunciations.
Antje? Yeah, I don't know.
Antje? This is terrible because I think the name is used in the book and I don't remember and I listened to it. So apologies. Wagmeister Parlberg, and she was a determined widow and immigrant to the Chicago area whose historical farm became the village of South Holland, Illinois, or at least is where South Holland, Illinois kind of took off. The novel's character, the widow Parlenberg, is a nod to the real life Parlberg, though her family has made it known that they believe the character of Parlenberg is a misrepresentation of their matriarch, who would never have behaved so flirtatiously. and if you like Google her image, it is like the classic, like, like old woman who looks very bad.
I gotta look it up now.
I mean, just haunting.
Oh yeah.
Those are the people that I came from also. So anyway. Yeah, I guess I'm not exactly sure where to start. I probably overdid it with the description of the book, but I don't know. I liked this one. I'm always surprised every time I choose a book that's like 100 years old that I'm going to enjoy it. And I don't know why I have that idea in my mind that I think it's going to be boring. But
I know it is kind of it is so different, you know, than what we have. I mean, there's plenty of family epics that are still being written today. One that I thought of is Pachinko by Min Jin Lee. And I always like these types of books. They're a lot of times they're really long. Like Pachinko is so long. So I don't tend to pick them up because I just don't have time for a 400 page novel. But yeah, I really liked this book. It's just like, here's some people who are different from, I mean, that's how I felt. It's like, I don't know anything about Dutch settlers in the Chicago area. And now I do. It sort of is just like, oh yeah, this is like what part of one of the reasons for reading is find out about people very different from yourself.
Right. I liked it too. And I don't know if it's because like we're from the Midwest or whatever, or because the area of the Midwest that I live in particularly is was settled like primarily by Dutch people also. I mean, we've literally got a not far from here, Holland, Michigan. So that it felt kind of neat to like read about what people were probably doing here too, you know, not that long ago. I mean, of course, Chicago's not, you know, all of a 3-hour car drive away or whatever, so it's not very far. But I liked that, and also I just loved Selena. I think she's so great. I wish I could read a book about a longer book about her childhood with her father. Because I just thought that was like such an interesting lifestyle. He's literally just going to like gambling houses, and whatever he manages to make is what they've got. And so they might live in a nicer place for a while. And then if he loses all their money, they live in a boarding house or whatever. Probably very chaotic, but would be an interesting book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. I just looked up while you were going over the summary, South Holland, Illinois, to see what it looks like. And it's so, I mean, like you said, we're from the Midwest. Both of us have been to Chicago probably multiple times. So even though I would never say that I like know Chicago at all, I'm familiar with like some of the neighborhoods and stuff. Uh-huh. Like they mentioned Gold Coast, building a new house there and stuff. And anyway, it's just bizarre to look at what the South Holland, where this widow's farm was. It's completely all built up. I mean, now it's like a town of like 21,000 and surrounded by probably a bunch of other towns of 21,000. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, they're, you probably just drive from one into the next until you're in still downtown Chicago.
Yes, you're still deep in the suburbs here. And it's just like one of those things that it's like crazy. It's just, I don't know, it's wild to think about how that was all just like farms, and then they drove all the way into Chicago and drive, I mean, with horses.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was nice. It's kind of like, I think reading this, I was like, oh, I see why people like stuff like Little House on the Prairie, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, granted, and the caveats for the fact that like all of the racial politics exist, you know? So just be aware of that. It's not very focused on different racial things, but every once in a while it pops up because you would expect it to in a book about a bunch of white people from 100 years ago. So
yes, for sure, especially towards the end when we go back into Chicago, there's some things there. But yeah, I also liked reading about Selena. I would say that definitely the parts with her I found much more interesting. I did lose a little bit of my interest when we really got into Sobig or Dirk. Yeah. I'll call him Dirks because the book is so big, so that might get confusing. But when we really got into like his situation, I was like, all right, this is, you know, I get it because this is an older book, so tropes haven't been they're not all, like, we haven't seen the same tropes over and over again. But especially, like, with Dirk and meeting Dallas, I was like, okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, she's not like other girls. Great, 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 great. Not that I'm blaming Ferber for writing about it, but it's just...
No, because I think probably at the time she was considered, or would have been considered, like, one of the kind of bright young people, like a flapper probably, because this mm-hmm. would have been the 1920s that the book kind of ends at. Obviously she's not going into the future with it, so I think that's what we're kind of being shown, right? Like, she's worldly, she's different than Selena's type or whatever,
or all the girls in the office kind of thing. Right, but yeah, and I mean, in a lot of ways that's interesting, because how many artists were women, like working artists were women at this time? Right. I mean, how many working artists are women now, really?
She's selling a single drawing for $1,500.
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah, that's crazy. It's also, gosh, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place. So like I said in the summary, the book starts out when Selena Peak is a young girl. So it's like the late 1800s, like mid-1880s, maybe to 1900 or so. And then when Dirk is an adult, it's in the 1920s, and so he goes off to World War One. But also I couldn't stop thinking about what was just coming around the corner with the, you know, depression, and like mm-hmm. how much money he has, because he becomes a banker after he stops being an architect, and all of the money that the friends have, Julie and her daughter, who Dirk is in love with, Paula. And like, I just, in my head, I'm like, oh, I would like kind of like a follow up of like what happened to those people during the depression.
I mean, like the worst place you want to be, or not the worst, I shouldn't say that, but one of the bad places is to be in banking, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
How many banks went under because of Gotta that?
Be. Yeah. Terrible time for that. And I think what was really interesting to that about me, and especially like this talking about Dallas, and like when they bring Rolf like back to the farm and stuff, and they're these like worldly artist types, and they're so much more fascinated by like people who live the simple life out in the mm-hmm. out in the country or whatever, is it really does kind of feel like right now, like the kind of weariness that like young people have about wealth and that sort of thing, and like this weird position that we're in currently looking at extravagance and that sort of thing. So it does feel like kind of timely in a way to me. I don't know. I thought that was interesting that I feel like we're at that part of the cycle again.
Yeah. Well, it was also, I thought, interesting too, because they do sort of admire Selena so much, but at this point, Selena's got money too.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So it's very much like they're looking at her simple life, but they're looking at it and on her best years. Like mm-hmm. would they, it's just an interesting, like, would they have felt the same when Purvis was alive and they were like struggling?
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know. It's kind of interesting to look at that and then to think about how, yeah, it's sort of like anybody who goes to an office 9 to 5 is like not cool to like oh, yeah. Dallas no. and Dallas's friends. And not that I was looking for this book to do any sort of like social critique, but, you know, it doesn't.
I mean, it does in that it's saying like, okay, so to frame this, Selena's, what does he say? What her father says to her about like the two different kinds of people there
oh,
are.
Oh, yeah.
And like the world being an adventure. I read it on my phone. And so I don't have any spatial memory of what part of the page it was on.
Well, there was
so
something
possible for me to.
It might have been her father who said like some people are wheat and some people are emeralds.
Yes, and then something about like being so much velvet or something like that.
I don't remember that part, but and I mean, I guess I should say like there's certain things that Ferber doesn't really critique. But that we haven't at this point when the book was written, nobody was really talking about it. Like just about how she sort of looks at the office girls, or Dirk looks at the office girls as like, they're all the same. They all do the same things. They all speak the same way. And it's like, well, there's really no pushback against this idea that he is thinking they're all the same when, like, why are they? They probably all grew up poor and then this is the best job they could get. Like,
it's also funny because, you know, he, I mean, I think there is some jabs at him and in his life. Well, and I think there definitely is because that's not what Selena wanted for him at all. So this was the point I was trying to make before when I couldn't remember what I was doing. So her father tells her basically like that life is just like a big grand adventure and you just kind of have to like live to see it and to watch it unfold in front of you. And so there's this quote. He says, the more kinds of people you see and the more things you do and the more things that happen to you, the richer you are. Even if they're not pleasant things, that's living. Remember, no matter what happens, good or bad, it's just so much velvet, which I think is a gambling term, possibly. I'm not sure. But anyway, so she kind of takes that to heart a little bit. And so when he dies and she's on the wagon headed out into the country, she's a little bit thrilled because she's going to be experiencing new things, and that's what she's really looking forward to, and that's what she wants for her son Dirk. But he is just so obsessed with like obtaining wealth and reaching the same status or reaching a status that can impress Paula, who is Selena's good friend from school's daughter, and they're like extremely wealthy, like Potter Palmer House wealthy for Chicago. And so he can't ever quite do that. And so he's just striving to be like everybody else in that way. And I think that's very disappointing to her. And I think the book is definitely trying to show you, obviously, that like his life isn't made better by trying to do all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true, too, because even though Dallas entertains him, she never gives him anything.
Yeah.
Like it's not really presented as Dirk is her equal. At all.
No.
And in a way, yeah, it kind of, because there's one point where, who is it? Well, it's Selena's friend, Julie's dad, August, who ends up helping Selena, gives her a loan to get her farm started after her husband dies. And he says something, because Selena's like, no, I want to give my kid better than what I had, so he can do whatever he wants. And August is kind of like, that's not going to work. Like, he has to make his own mistakes. And it kind of, he was right? Like, Selena wanted him to do all this stuff, and he basically was like, no, I don't want any adventures. I just want, like, the safe route.
Right. And it's interesting because I'm not sure exactly what the book is saying, because Selena is certain that Dirk is very special, and she's raising him trying to raise him to be something really interesting and special. But he makes all these choices always, like you said, that are very safe. When he's in college, he befriends this older woman. She's in her mid-30s or whatever. And then the other college kids his age come to him and are like, you need to stop hanging out with her because she's not it. And so then he just kind of up and decides that he's no longer going to speak with her. He's not going to bring her home to have dinner with Selena anymore and that sort of thing. And it wasn't even like he had a romantic interest in her. He was just friendly with her. And Selena kind of reprimands him when he says, well, we're not together anymore. Well, you know, we don't hang out anymore in the same crowds or anything. And she's like, well, she's the kind of person that you need to be around in order to experience life better.
Yeah.
Which I think is the point the book's trying to make, right? Like, you need to look at people who are not exactly like you. And, you know, it's in a 1920s way cute.
I did think that was, like, really, really on point about how the college that Dirk goes to has the classified students and then the unclassified students. We nowadays call the unclassifieds adult learners.
Yes. Returning, like, students or whatever.
Yeah. And it's interesting to, like, see the younger students, you know, the regular freshmen and whatnot, talk about the unclassifieds the same way that
the
people do now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're too into asking questions. They always want to, like, they're so eager. They're so happy to be in school. And it's
they're
just
11 months pregnant.
Yeah.
I had to present my final lesson plan in my last class that I took. And it was the first time that I, like, literally pointed out and said that I happened to be pregnant. And, like, my whole class was just like...
I mean, it's funny because I was only a few years older when I went back to school to get my degree. And it already felt like I could already feel the gap between.
Yeah.
Like, it's just different when you're like, yes, I work 40 hours a week. Like, I have a job and an apartment. It's like weird how it's not even that many years. And it just feels like there's a huge gulf between.
I know.
Yeah. Not that I didn't. I liked a lot of people, friends with people I went to school with. But you know what I mean? It is different.
But it's funny because, like, it seems kind of like stereotypical that kids would say that. But, like, I gotta believe that that's how it really was. I mean, not that long ago, we had all of this programming telling us not to treat people that way, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, that must have been the way that people actually behave, which is kind of crummy. So, yeah, I don't know. Dirk was a huge disappointment to me personally.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, I think Selena loved him unconditionally, but, like, she was just so much more thrilled by, like, Rolf coming back. Rolf Poole was the son of the people that she stayed with when she first came to teach in High Prairie. I think it's called High Prairie. I may mm-hmm. have that wrong. But
yeah.
And he was just kind of a bright kid who had to quit going to school because he was too old and his parents needed him to help work on the farm. And she kind of mentored him. And he had a big crush on her. But I think it was kind of just because, you know, there were two people who saw the world in a similar way or whatever. And I wish we got a little bit more of his story, too, because he sounds like he became slightly obnoxious.
Yeah.
When they start calling him the French sculptor.
Yeah.
As though he was from France.
Yeah. I was happy that they were able to reunite, though. I mean, I guess I probably could have figured that it would happen, but I don't know. That was a nice reunion between Selena and him. What did you think about her and Purvis's relationship?
So first, I was just like, it was such a thing to do those lunch auctions, wasn't it?
Oh my gosh.
Was that, I mean, that must have really happened if it was in every piece of media that's like taking place at this time. It's like Oklahoma. It's like the center plot line of Oklahoma. and this too. And so she meets Purvis. He's widowed, and the widow Parlenberg actually has her eyes set on him. And then they do this kind of lunch auction as a charity thing for something. I'm not sure exactly what, but and the widow Parlenberg's like this fantastic cook, and her basket does not really get much money. And because Purvis has a slight crush on Selena, he basically drives up the bids to, like, mm-hmm. what was it, like $15 or something?
I think it was $10.
That's a lot of money
back then. Yeah.
And especially when these farmers, they're saying, like, sometimes they'll come back from the market in Chicago with like a couple of bucks most. So he drives up the bidding super high for her, like, jelly sandwiches or whatever, because she's so cute and so small. I thought it was sweet. But he's also, it was sweet. You know, he wants to learn how to read and do math well and stuff. And she's able to, like, help him with that. And that's kind of how they fall in love. And then she gets all horny for his hands. Mm-hmm. There's a part where they're doing their studies after he's done working for the day. And she can't, she's trying to make herself not look at his hands, but she just can't. And she just drives herself wild with it, which was very funny to read.
Good, strong hands. Yeah. Yeah. That was really funny because this is just my own thing, because the widow's name is the Widow Parlenberg. You uh-huh. picture her as an older woman.
Uh-huh.
And so naturally I picture Purvis as an older man. So it was like hard for me to, like, change my thinking to where, like, Purvis is probably only, what, 10 years older? than at Selena, most, probably. At most.
Yeah.
And because these people died young all the time.
Right. His wife had died in childbirth. And so he probably wasn't all that much older than her.
Yeah.
Realistically. But yeah. But also just, man, gotta say, Purvis, probably a perfectly fine Dutch name, does not translate well in English. So that's gotta be rough.
I was very charmed by all the Dutch names, and I was very charmed by all the Dutch stereotypes.
Yeah.
I never really knew any before I moved to Grand Rapids. And then people were like, no, Dutch people are like cheap. And I was like, what? I never heard that before. Yeah. But apparently it's a stereotype. It's a thing. And
a lasting one, perhaps. Yeah. Whether or not it's true, it is a stereotype. Yeah. Or just the fact that they're all like 7.5 feet tall.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Purvis was very tall. And it's funny because, like, it's, you know, Dirk comments on his own like Dutch face or whatever, or like Dutch stubbornness. And it's just like, what is a Dutch face, though? It's like,
yeah. I was sort of charmed by the just like how incredibly practical the people out in the country were, because it was a little funny to have it juxtaposed with her like fancifulness, where, you know, she's remarking on the cabbages in the field looking like what, chalcedony or whatever it is. I don't know how what these words mean, but they're basically like jewels in the field. And the farmer she's with, Klaus Poole, he's like, cabbages is pretty, and he's just like completely thrown off by it. But then I was thinking about it and I was like, literally, that is my mother's family. <It's> like my Uncle Dale acts just like that. So it's just like that is such you know, like, that is the culture in certain parts of the world, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think it's interesting. It made me think a little bit of The Discomfort of Evening, which is set in the Netherlands. And I think that's why, like, when I think of the Netherlands, I think of, like, Amsterdam, right? Like,
right.
A party city, really. And it's like, well, Dutch farmers and, like, maybe more, like, country people are just so different from that.
Right.
But it's hard to wrap my mind around, like, what I think of now as the Netherlands versus what it, you know, what it was back then.
Yeah.
But yeah. Purvis. I was also just surprised. I mean, I knew once he bought her lunch basket, I knew they were going to get married eventually.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I was like, is there ever going to be something more to Purvis? Are we going to get like a secret, you know, he secretly loves wildflowers or something? And like you said, you know, there isn't. That's just what he is. And he's like, a woman's place is not in the farm fields. You don't get to tell me what to do. I'm just going to do this the same way that I've always done it, even though it clearly hasn't been working, Purvis.
No, he's got like the worst piece of land in all of High Prairie. It's not the right kind of land for what he's planting in it. And he just toils over it and just like breaks his back for no good reason at all. I always love a story like this where it's just like, you know, somebody clearly has the good idea, but like other people are like, well, we can't do it that way because it's never been done that way before. And how could you possibly learn about farming from a book when my family's been farming for, you know, 800 years or whatever? And so I loved that story, especially just because like, it's clearly about her being a woman and not having any sense for that. And just the kind of metaphor that is for never paying attention to people who you consider outsiders in things, and how that holds everybody back forever. So I always like a story where that kind of turns around, like somebody can turn it around eventually.
Yeah.
Too bad it took Purvis dying for it to happen. But
poor Purvis. That was probably one of my favorite sections in the book, is when she is just like, I am going to go to market. She's got a hired hand, Jan, which is a very Dutch name.
I believe it's Jan.
Jan, yes. And he doesn't really, I think he might be what do I want to say? Just not very smart. Like, you don't think he really knows math or knows how to, like, add or subtract. So he doesn't do a very good job when he tries to take the food to the market. So then Selena decides to, and she's like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wash everything. I'm going to do all this stuff. And then she gets to the market. She gets a good spot. She, like, sneaks in to a good spot, but then nobody buys from her because they cannot conceive of a woman selling vegetables.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean,
I love that section too, mm-hmm. especially when she's like, I want to group all the vegetables by size. I want to have them really clean and shining. I love that idea. Like, the kind of gumption that's like, we're going to make these look better than everyone else's.
Yeah.
You know, like, marketing sense, essentially, I thought was great. And then, yeah, when she sneaks the wagon in and she and Dirk are basically like flipping the bird to the guy that was trying to get in there instead. This is kind of wonderful, but yeah. But of course, like, you know, it seems is going too well, and you're like, wow, she's going to like really get by. And then it kind of falls flat, which is, of course, probably how it would have gone.
Yeah.
Realistically.
I think it was really an interesting like way of writing it, because at the beginning of the chapter, it's like, okay, this is going to be a devastating day for Selena. Like, the writing is literally like, oh, you'd think it would be good, but unfortunately, nope, it's heartbreaking and devastating. And it's like, oh, so she just got there. She's got all of her pretty vegetables, and now it's going to go horribly wrong. And then, but she just keeps trying. And then she goes, and I don't even know. I mean, I know she lived in Chicago, so she has a good idea of the geography of it, but it's like she just like finds this guy who's like, I don't know what you'd call him, a wholesaler, I guess.
Yeah.
Peddler provides, or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he buys some of her stuff. And then she just goes into this other neighborhood and starts selling door to door. And it just like, I don't know. It just reminded me of times when I've been like, you know, lost or something in a different city. And it's like, what do I do? Nobody is here to save me. I have to get out of here by myself. And yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what she was thinking, is she's like, I have to sell. We have to have money for food. So way more, obviously way more dramatic than anything I've experienced. But
I loved when she starts going door to door, which does end up blowing up in her face because a policeman stops her and asks her if she has a permit, which mm-hmm. she doesn't. But she does happen to get saved by a huge coincidence. But anyway, that first door she goes to knock on, you can tell she's like very, very nervous. She doesn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And she goes and she knocks on the door and asks the person who answers, like, do you want any radishes or whatever? And the person is like, no. And they're like, well, what about whatever vegetables? And the person's like, well, do you have any, I can't remember what it was, butter, maybe something like that.
Oh yeah.
And she said no.
Dairy. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically it ends and she's like, well, that person didn't hate me.
Yes.
I just didn't have what they wanted. And I was like, that's such a good way of looking at it, because like, it's like me making a telephone call.
Yeah.
or whatever, you know.
Yes.
And that's how she gets herself to keep moving, where she's like, oh, it, you know, like, this isn't the end of the world. I just didn't have what they did want.
Yeah. So, they just didn't want vegetables. They just said no. That's the worst that'll happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually does get worse, but
yeah. And I loved a lot of those little parts of the book that are very humorous. There's a part where her friend Julie is saying something, oh, about being a teacher or whatever. And she's like, but the teachers are like 30. And the book is like, you know, a 16-year-old's idea of like, or incapacity of like imagining anyone being older than 30.
Yeah.
Something like that. And just kind of like funny little humorous asides in the book were really pleasant surprises to me.
It is funny you mentioned Little House on the Prairie, because I think in one of the later books, I can't remember. Oh, I guess her name's Laura, right? Laura goes to teach at a school in like way out in the country and has to like live with another family. So
yeah.
Obviously that must have happened a lot back then.
Yeah. And because they needed people to go out into the, you know, where nobody was.
And I guess
basically,
none of the wives, they don't have any time to be doing that.
Oh my God. The amount of work that Selena must have had to do, like, to keep that farm going. And then eventually she's got enough money where she's got people, you know, helping her out around the house.
Yeah. But
crazy to think about.
So
trying to keep something like that running. Sorry.
Let your kids make mistakes and don't give them too much.
Yeah.
It's okay to deprive them. I'm just kidding. I'm not saying that's what this book is about, but I mean, it's a little bit saying, you know, to give your kid too much and not let them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, she's very happy to just kind of have exactly enough. And I think the interesting thing to think about is, like, the book talks about how people would pass by her home and they would look in and they would see her sitting in front of her fireplace that she had put in. And they would think that was just, like, absolutely extravagant, right? Mm-hmm. But she's very pleased with just having that and sitting in front of the fire and thinking about the people that she's loved throughout her life or whatever. And then you get also the image of Dirk in his flat in Chicago with all of these, you know, beautiful furniture that was picked out by an interior designer or whatever. But then you also get the feeling that it feels kind of like fake and not mm-hmm. real. And he's unhappy there because he's constantly, you know, trying to have more of what he doesn't have. But yeah, so I liked that. I mean, it's very cliche, a little trite, I suppose, of being like happy with having just enough. But it's nice. It's a nice sort of sentiment. Especially in a time of excess is what I'm assuming is the point.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to have a fireplace, so maybe I'm just jealous. Or I find that very aspirational.
I do want to talk a little bit about Paula, who is, I think you already said it, Selena's friend's daughter, who grows up rich, marries this filthy rich older guy, and then basically probably has always been in love with Dirk, but
toys around with him.
Yeah. And what she ends up doing is really, like, he's successful in his job because she tells him what to do. And I thought that was, like, a really interesting look at, like, at a period of time where most women don't really have power to do anything like that, she is able to sort of exert some sort of power and be successful in business without the social stigma of being a working woman, which I assume people of her social class would not, like, look very kindly on.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting too, like, fascinating that the way that these women talk to Dirk, you know, he's basically always begging Paula, like, why don't you love me or whatever? And she's essentially like, no, I do love you. It's just you're never going to have enough money for me. Yeah. And, like, how straightforward that talk is, because I think that for a certain class of people, that is absolutely a huge calculation to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting. And similarly, when he falls in love with Dallas, he's like, well, I love you and I can love you and I could give you things that you'll never be able to have on your own. And she's like, no, I like people to be bumpy or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, I think I probably would have liked you better if you had stayed toiling as an architect than if you had just gone this route. And he was like, well, if I had known, I would have stayed an architect for you. And she's like, no, that's not the point.
Right.
And so I just loved the way that these women were just, like, very frank with him about that.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of, I mean, I don't know. It is kind of interesting because all three of them really sort of decided to do their own thing. I mean, I know Paula, like, the least of all, because she did get married and stuff. But again, she's just, like, being seen out in public with Dirk while she's married and people are talking, and she's still just doing it because she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. That was, like, weird when she was just like, oh yeah, I'm not going to marry you because you don't make enough money. But I do feel like she was trying to get him to make enough money so that she could divorce her husband or when her husband dies.
Potentially. But yeah. Like the amount of money she had was just, like, so exponential.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah, it was never going to happen.
Plus, like you said, the depression's right around the corner.
Oh yeah. That, you know, at the end of the book they're talking about fox hunting in the United States. And it's like, that's not gonna last very long.
No.
So Yeah. It seems like, I guess probably just like the benefit of hindsight or whatever, but like looking at the disparities in wealth and wealth inequality that existed then, where you've got people without toilets in their homes and then like people, you know, literally being waited on hand and foot and living in like these gilded hotels. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. And then you think about now, of course, those inequalities still exist, but for some reason the gulf seems, I don't know, so much bigger for back then.
Yeah.
But I think that's a matter of technology.
And
but.
Well, and you can kind of see how we got to where we are in some ways. Like the fact that all of these farmers had to just load up their wagons and go for all night, like drive their horses all night to get to the market and then just hand sell them. It's kind of mm-hmm. like that was that could never be sustainable.
No.
You know, yeah. And I'm not saying anything we do now is the right way to do it, but like you can just see how history and, you know, progress marches on because there's so many people. How do you possibly feed anybody yeah. in an efficient way? It's kind of, yeah. I don't know, sad in a way, really.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, yeah, especially when you're doing it in a way that's not like where every home kind of has their own garden that they use mm-hmm. to feed themselves for most of the year or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't that long ago. It was just 100 years ago. I know. When I was a kid, that would have seemed like so forever ago. But now I'm just like, that's no time at all. That's no time at all. Interesting.
Yeah.
I enjoy this. Edna Ferber has other novels that I've never heard of before. I'm glad that I decided to like scroll way back on the Pulitzer Prize Wikipedia and pull something out. You know, part of me was surprised that like there were women winning the Pulitzer that long ago. Of course, they were all white women, but mm-hmm. you know, I was like, I'm sure those will all be dudes all the way down.
Yeah. But
this one, I think, was a winner. So,
well, and it's interesting, too, because obviously a lot of women write about men, but this was really primarily a story about women. And of course, there's stuff about Dirk, but it's really he's in there only because he's Selena's son. So, yeah, I don't know. It was kind of interesting. I'm glad you picked it out.
Yeah. All of his relationships are with women.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. So interesting.
It was good. I liked it a lot.
Thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find all of the ways to contact us. Our email and social media links are all at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be Celestial Bodies by Joka Alharty. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Yonk and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. God damn, what month is it?